Ruby Ryder here. Welcome to Pegging Paradise Podcast number 179 on December 19th, 2017. Changing the world one ass at a time. If you enjoy and appreciate my work and you want to help me spread the word about pegging, consider becoming a patron of mine so that I can spend more time doing podcasts, answering questions, writing articles for all those people out there interested in pegging everywhere. Just go to patreon.com/RubyRyder or click the support my work button on the right hand side of my website. And if you don't want to become a monthly donor and you would just like to make a one-time contribution, there's a little button underneath the support my work that just says donate. So if you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can do that. And please remember, there's an extraordinary and carefully curated selection of body-safe, non-toxic toys, and they can be purchased from the Little Black Dress of Pleasure Products, Entice Me. Just go to enticeme.com, #RubyRyder, and be sure to use that coupon code Ryder for 15% off of your purchase. That's R-Y-D-E-R. You will be supporting Pegging Paradise with every purchase you make. Here's the Patreon update.
Yes.
My new patrons are two. Guy pledged $5 per month. Wow, thank you so much for your support, Guy. I really appreciate it. And Hezer pledged $20 a month. Thank you so much. What a generous pledge, Hezer. For both of you, I hope you now enjoy your access to my Pegging Erotica stories, the written ones as well as the audio ones, because anything from $5 a month up, you have access to a full library of Pegging Erotica, and I think there's 60, 70, 80 stories in there at this point. And you also have access to all of my audio stories, because I take those pegging stories, read them out loud for you, so you can just plug in those earphones, be walking around in the market, listening to wild Pegging Erotica. Thank you, my new donors. Thank you so much. And speaking of Patreon, let's give you a little update. Apparently, while I was consumed with dealing with all of the fire stuff here where I live, Patreon was having some wild things happen too. I guess what they tried to do is they decided they wanted to change the fees that get charged from charging the creators to charging the donors. It was a sweet idea in terms of wanting the creators to get more money, but what they did was they decided that a flat fee of 35 cents plus 2.6% would be charged for each donor, for each pledge. And that's for every single pledge that you do, right? Well, the creators told them before they made this change that this was a really bad idea. And they did it, and it was a bad idea. Here's why. Because many of us have a whole lot of donors who were small amount donors. This is what makes this work. Are you patrons who only give like $1, $2, $3 a month? You guys rock. And, you know, your strength is in numbers. There's a whole bunch of you, and that is what makes Patreon work for us creators. So all of a sudden, you got these letters, I guess. I don't know what they look like, saying that this is what was going to happen, and a whole bunch of you canceled. Not on my Patreon account. I just had a couple who bailed, but at the same time, there were some creators out there who lost a significant amount of income per month. Well, Patreon decided, oops, I guess we made a mistake. So they went ahead and reversed it. Basically, they're you know, in the style of how what Netflix did, right? Netflix tried to raise their prices a whole bunch and then kind of went, oops, we blew it. Okay, never mind. So, and that was years ago. That was like 7 years ago or something like that. So this is what Patreon did. And I do really appreciate and acknowledge and respect a company who, when they realize they've blown it and made a mistake, they are willing to backtrack and correct that mistake. So I do appreciate that about them. And yes, that's what happened over there, in case any of you got caught up in that. And here we are back to the regular way it was. So there you go. In case any of you wondered what the hell was going on, that's what happened. I found out about all of this after everything calmed down with the fire. I had to basically Google it and go, what the hell? So now let's move on to your letters. I can virtually guarantee that you haven't received a letter like mine before, as the subject matter does not revolve around pegging or even sexual activity, but I think you'll still find that you can resonate with what I'm about to say. While not a newcomer to pegging or kink in general, I've only recently found your site, courtesy of Reddit. My wife and I are in our early 60s and discovered this wonderful activity a couple of decades ago. Although we don't practice it nearly as often as I would like, but that is another story for another time. As a newbie to your site, I've been working my way through your podcasts and wanted to comment on something you said during podcast number 28. This was the episode where you were advising the young 17-year-old man how to get sex toys through the mail. And great advice, by the way. You suggested that there were other ways to get an Amazon card rather than Walmart due to the way they pay their employees. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I have not darkened the doorway of a Walmart or Sam's Club for nigh on 20 years and have been shouting a call to arms against that evil corporation for nearly as long, much to the chagrin of my friends and family who just want me to give it a rest already. You are the first public, parentheses, semi-public, quasi-celebrity figure that I have heard also denounce the Walmart Corporation for their truly horrendous business practices. I would say that their shady dealings extend far beyond the way they basically screw their employees out of a living wage or basic humane benefits such as health insurance. If you truly want to see the harmful effects a Walmart store has on the neighborhoods they inhabit, watch the documentary The High Cost of Low Prices. It's several years old, so it might be a bit out of date, but it's quite chilling to know that a corporation that has burrowed its way so deeply into the very fabric of Americana basically shits all over the very people they purport to serve and care about. While I know Walmart isn't the only corporation who skirts the law the way they do, they seem to be the most egregious, in my opinion, because they try to present themselves as a company who cares, when, based on the evidence, the only thing they truly care about is the next dime they can grub off of the hard-working Americans who are sometimes forced to shop in their stores. So thank you for helping to pull back the curtain, even if ever so slightly, on this modern-day corporate Wizard of Oz. I feel somewhat vindicated to know that someone else feels the same way as I. Perhaps someday soon I'll write you a longer letter about the pegging history of my wife and I, but for now, I'll simply sign off with your own wonderful phrase, happy pegging. P.S. I was also delighted to find out that you, like my wife and I, are, quote, of a certain age, end quote. Just goes to show that age is just a number, and we more experienced folk can still have fun. American by birth, Italian at heart, Larry. Larry, thank you so much for this letter. And I am right there with you. I mean, clearly you know that because you heard me talk about it in podcast number 28. But, you know, something happened recently that I wanted to share. I don't think I shared it on my podcast. I think I just shared it on Facebook. And I was in a position to where I actually did buy one thing online from Walmart because it was something that I needed right away. It was actually a heating pad for my massage table because I do massage part-time. And mine died, and it was in the middle of winter, and basically Walmart could get it to me in 2 days, and I didn't have the money to pay a more expensive place, and it was really affordable. So yes, I am ashamed to admit, but I am also transparently confessing that I did order a massage heating pad for my table. After I received it, I went back to the Walmart website, and I got onto their chat, because, you know, they have a chat thing there. It's like, if you need help, you can chat with somebody, right? So I would like to read you the conversation that happened. The man who was chatting with me, his name was Charlie M. So Charlie says, "Thanks for chatting with Walmart.com. I'm Charlie M. and I'll be assisting you today. Hi, Charlie. Just needed you to delete my account. Hi, Ruby. I'll be more than glad to assist you. All right. Could you please confirm your billing address and email address linked to your account, please?" So I give him my email address and my billing address, and then Charlie says, "All right, let me close the account. Do you have any specific reason, Ruby?" And I said, "Because I do not like to support Walmart in the way they pay their employees so little that our tax dollars subsidize their businesses when their employees file for public assistance. I also disagree with the way they rarely hire women and people of color to higher positions. In short, They are a horrible company. This was a rare purchase of an item I could not find elsewhere. Charlie says, "Okay, Ruby, I have canceled your account, and I am really sorry to know this information. Believe me, I wish I could change it for you. I think all people deserve an opportunity in life, no matter the color. I am Latin from Guatemala, and I want to be treated equal to everyone else. Please accept my apologies, and I hope the best for you." And I responded, "No worries. I am glad you are able to find work, and I appreciate your help today." And he says, "More than welcome, Ruby." So there you go. I thought that not only I would read your letter, but I would read that interaction that I had with a Walmart employee. So yes, I absolutely really, I can count on one hand the times that I have shopped at Walmart since I have been aware of this. Every once in a while, something happens, like one time my sister fell and broke her foot, and she needed a walker. Well, that was pretty much the easiest and quickest place to go get a walker at, what was it, 8 or 9 o'clock at night? And yes, they did have it, but like I say, I can count on one hand the times I have shopped in Walmart. I don't make it a habit, and I would suggest all of you don't as well. And I'm going to get on Netflix or Hulu, whichever one has that documentary, and give it a watch, because I like to have more details to give people when I put my foot down and take such a hardcore position. Because, you know, a lot of people do shop at Walmart. And I know that in your letter, Larry, you had mentioned that some people are forced to. Yeah, because they have so little money that it's a place where they can actually afford to get some of the things that they need. But there is a price to pay for that. It's really awful. So in between when I recorded this and now that I'm editing it today, I did actually, late last night, watch the documentary Walmart, The High Cost of Low Prices. And wow, to say that it's chilling is really an understatement. They are aggressively anti-union to the point of intimidating their employees horrendously. They fly a private jet in with a bunch of people who were there to basically attack all of the employees who are for the union. They hire a whole bunch of new employees who have to be anti-union. That's just one example. I mean, there is so much in this documentary that will blow your mind, including all of the goods that are bought in China, sometimes in factories that have horrendous working conditions. And they actually send people in from Walmart to tutor these people, to teach them how to lie, so that when the people come in and ask the questions, making sure that they have okay working conditions and that they're not working more than 6 days a week, which is not okay for human rights violations, they teach them how to lie and basically threaten them with firing them if they don't. So I could go on and on, but I really encourage you to watch it. I found a link on YouTube, so you don't have to have either Hulu or Netflix to watch this. Just give it a watch and enlighten yourself, and hopefully never shop in Walmart again. I think it ends on a positive note, though, because there are communities who have fought a Walmart store coming in, and they have succeeded. So yeah, we need to do a lot of work around this, absolutely. Give it a watch, everybody. Okay, now I'm going to talk a little bit about what's happening on this day that I'm actually recording this podcast. Today is December 17th, the International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers, and this is something that's been happening every year since 2003. Let me read you something about it. This is from a website called worldpolicy.org, and I'm going to put that in the linkorama, of course, and it was published in February of this year. World Policy Journal begins each issue with the big question, where we ask a panel of experts to provide insight into the cover theme. The question for winter 2016-2017 is, what do sex workers need to better control their working conditions? And this is about the United States, okay? Sex work in the United States is criminalized. Criminalization is founded on two misconceptions: that sex work is the same as exploitation or human trafficking, and that criminalization will stop the spread of sexually transmitted diseases, as well as a heavy dose of moral panic. But the UN, in its Palermo Protocol, has already acknowledged there is a difference between sex work and trafficking, and the potential for exploitation exists And the potential for exploitation exists in many industries. Think coal mining or clothing manufacturing. The solution to that problem is regulation, not criminalization. As to public health concerns, the tactics used to criminalize the sex industry actually disincentivize healthy behavior. When sex work is criminalized, sex workers are denied the ability to control their work environments to ensure their safety. For example, to enforce criminal laws, law enforcement agencies often weaken or eliminate access to tools that keep sex workers safe. In 2014, when the FBI closed My Red Book, a website used to conduct background checks on clients and share warnings about those who might be dangerous, it destroyed a mechanism sex workers used to self-regulate their industry. Similarly, the use of condoms as evidence of prostitution leads to sex workers carrying fewer to avoid police detection. Police have a long history of using their power to sexually assault and rape sex workers, as highlighted in a June 2016 Oakland, California, Police Department investigation. Increased contact with law enforcement results in more detention and jail time, which has disastrous effects on sex workers' health, housing, ability to support their families, immigration status, and prospects for future employment. Because sex workers don't feel safe reporting criminal activity to police, they lack recourse when their rights are violated. So what do sex workers need to better control their working conditions and ensure safety? Number one, sex workers need the government to stop destroying their means of vetting clients. This undermines safety and a financial bottom line, which leaves sex workers vulnerable to exploitative working conditions. Number two, sex workers need to stop being separated from their children and denied the right to housing. These actions put an emotional strain on sex workers and force many underground out of fear, away from health and social services. Number three, sex workers need a change in the narratives around the sex industry. Sex work is not inherently dangerous and should not be treated as such. Number four, sex workers need evidence-based laws that protect them and their right to work. The regulation of sex work under labor law in New Zealand and New South Wales, called decriminalization, has been proven to best protect the health and safety of sex workers. Number five, sex workers need police to enforce existing laws against violence and exploitation, including when the perpetrators are members of law enforcement agencies. In Merseyside, England, for example, where attacks against sex workers are considered hate crimes, violence against sex workers decreased and prosecutions for rape increased. Number six, sex workers need anti-trafficking advocates to work with them, not against them. Anti-trafficking funds are behind many of the raids against sex workers. These raids reduce sex workers' ability to work together to ensure safety and reduce the likelihood that sex workers will report trafficking when they become aware of it. Finally, sex workers need to be included in the discussion about how to end systemic violence. As sex workers have said for years, nothing about us without us. So I wanted to read that to you because, you know, you can't be involved in the sex education field and do all of this stuff without encountering a bunch of sex workers. And they're people, just like the rest of us. They deserve to be able to work without violence. They are not all victims, like many news agencies would like to portray. And yes, there is absolutely something to the funding to stop the trafficking is there because the definition of sex trafficking has been widened to include just about all sex workers as well. So I wanted to read that to you because this is a part of life that people have a knee-jerk reaction to, the whole sex work thing. And many of you know I'm quite the champion for sex workers' rights because I believe that is a victimless crime. If the only difference between filming a porn movie and sex work is that there's cameras involved, why is sex work illegal? And eventually, I do believe that decriminalization will happen in this country, hopefully within my lifetime, because it is a choice, and it's a choice that should be respected. The history behind this yearly honored day is pretty gloomy, actually. In 2003, a guy that they named the Green River Killer, basically received 48 life sentences and no chance of parole for the 70-plus women he killed in the state of Washington over the course of 20 years. And when he was asked why he chose his victims, he was actually recorded saying, "I picked prostitutes as victims because they were easy to pick up without being noticed. I knew they would not be reported missing. I picked prostitutes because I thought I could kill as many of them as I wanted without getting caught." Since that time, December 17th has been used as a day to bring awareness to the public about violence towards sex workers, and I'm going to read you a little bit more about this. "This December 17th, International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers, I want us to start taking a critical look at the way we view violence. Violence does not start and end with murder. The prevalence of stigma, lack of compassion, and lack of education around sex work means that violence for sex workers and other marginalized communities can start anywhere, including the doctor's office, the local housing authority, the government assistance office, interactions with law enforcement, etc. Stopping violence also includes stopping microaggressions. It is there that the dehumanizing of people of certain backgrounds, race, abilities, economic status, and class start. Microaggressions can look like dead hooker jokes, slut shaming, outing someone for sexual preferences that deviate from your own, singing or rapping along with whorephobic or homophobic lyrics, or your favorite entertainers saying whorephobic things and using hashtags like not a stripper, though they have benefited from either mocking or emulating stripper culture themselves. Caring about sex workers and treating them as whole humans means caring about the things that affect them." And bringing this subject to a close, I would like to say, pay attention to and educate yourself on the private prison industrial complex and how our government financially benefits from keeping sex work, among other things, illegal. And here's another letter that showed up in my forum. "I'm the gentleman who posted a comment on your blog a while back about how I waited 7 years in our marriage to get pegged, and I did get a chance to see your comment back and listen to the podcast, so thank you. I was pretty nervous the next few times asking about it, and she was still a bit uncomfortable here and there, mostly on if she was doing it right and things of that nature. I don't know how to explain it exactly, but a few weeks ago something changed inside me, and I started opening up more emotionally to my wife for the first time. Can you imagine? I've never flat out looked her directly in the eyes and told her that she's beautiful. I grew up in an abusive household, so I learned to hide a lot of emotions. My wife always knew that I had the ability to overcome it. She saw it in me, and there were times that small things slipped out where I let my guard down over the years. I mention all of this because the pegging and some other factors in my life helped our communication. It taught me to stop being so scared about mentioning anything with emotional impact. It also helped her gain self-confidence. She told me that at first it was kind of uncomfortable to her, but now she loves how I find her so sexy, and not just pegging me, but every aspect of her body. One day I just broke down and told her how much I loved her and the reasons why, and one of the reasons is that she doesn't judge me, especially on enjoying pegging, but being judged on anything else I do as well. She has struggled with image issues her whole life, but after the pegging sessions, when we started getting comfortable with everything, and me finally telling her how beautiful I think she truly is, she finally realizes she's not ugly. Another thing that pegging got me into was dressing her in high heels, so now I really started paying attention to her feet and legs. I actually was never into feet, but now we've gone online together and picked out various shoes, and not just shoes for sex, but cute shoes that show off her beautiful feet without killing them either. She's been teasing my cock with her foot now, too, which I love. We also recently started experimenting more with some dirty talk, which she told me has helped her confidence as well. Just wanted to put this out there to everyone. Pegging really can help change relationships for the better, especially in communication outside the bedroom." Oh, what a great letter. Thank you so much for sending this in. Always, and I use this phrase a lot because it's true, it warms my heart to hear these stories. Relationships opening up, being willing to go into the emotional territory, letting go of image issues, becoming more self-confident, and having a better self-esteem. All of these things are just jewels, really, treasures to be found. And it's not all due to pegging, but pegging sometimes is what turns the key and opens people up and makes them decide that, wow, if I can do this, then maybe these other things I could do too. And because it does require that vulnerability, sometimes men are able to open up more emotionally, which it sounds like exactly what you did. I loved your story about the way that you described how you had actually never looked her straight in the eyes and told her how beautiful she was. Really, that one almost got me in tears. Those moments are so precious and so amazing and so connected that I'm really happy for you both that you found yourself there and you are still there now. The high heels sound like a bonus. And also the shoes that don't kill her feet, too. I like how you differentiated there. I really appreciate that. High heels are beautiful, but the older I get, oh, you really gotta have a good reason to get me in a pair of high heels these days. Sometimes I can find ones that are fairly comfortable, but most of the time, nah, not so much. Thank you so much for writing in, sir. And here's another letter. Upon reviewing your podcast number 169 regarding the vagus nerve and long dildos, I watched the video and noticed a sizable amount of pre-cum and dripping running out of his penis. And the second time she puts it back in, he starts to ooze white cum out, and not a small amount. Could be a good reason to let your girl do this. I'm not sure whether he feels similar to an orgasm. While I have never had that cum happen to me, my girlfriend says she gets much more pre-cum by using a bigger toy. Yes, she has used the same toy on me. Laugh out loud. I do feel, quote, relieved, end quote, when she has caused me to drip a good bit. It feels as if there is no longer a full prostate, especially after 2 weeks of no ejaculation. Hope this adds to your already tremendous knowledge and experience. Yes, draining the prostate like that, even if there is no feeling of an ejaculation, I think is really good for it and also important for it if there is no ejaculation, because the Stanford study showed that the more men have ejaculations, the less chance there will be that they get prostate cancer. So the more ejaculations, the better. What does that mean if you don't have ejaculations? That means you need to drain the prostate of the fluid, in my world anyway. I'm not a doctor, you all know that, but that's what I think. So I totally agree with you that if you're not having ejaculations, that it's important to do some sort of prostate draining activity, be it toys, be it fingers, you know, what have you. Oops, while editing this, I found out that it's actually a study from Harvard, and the link is in the Linkorama for you, so check it out. Thanks for writing in. This was a comment on podcast number 177. Another great show. I found the discussion about enemas interesting, and I have a comment. We use medium-sized dildos for pegging, and they are long enough that they reach the sphincter between the rectum and the colon. With any withdrawal and repenetration, eventually you get a big mess. I find if I can fill myself up with a full enema bag, it gets enough water up into the colon, so this does not happen. As you said, it is very important to wait after the enemas before playtime. Alas, one other mystery is solved, amusingly humiliating as it may be. I have always wondered why my wife does not need to go through such elaborate cleanup before anal sex. Apparently, my cock, unlike the dildos, is not long enough to reach the second sphincter. Thanks for everything you do. So this is really interesting because I've had a couple of people write in and say, hey, when I fuck women, you know, I don't have a dirty dick, you know, I don't have any problems with a mess, so what's the deal with the pegging thing? And Tiffany has said that too, Tiffany of EnticeMe.com. So this may be part of the answer, but what I will say to you, sir, is that as much as you men out there, the vast majority of you anyway, it seems as if you all long for long dicks. You all really would like to have a dick that's longer than what you have, or you would just like to have a long one, right? Oh my goodness, long dicks are cervix crushers, Having my cervix hammered is no fun. So long ones are not a real good time for me, you know? And that's just me with PIV and all that kind of stuff, right? But still, I thought I would say that. And there is an advantage to not having a really long dick. It doesn't get dirty when you fuck your partner in the ass. There you go. Thanks for that comment. It was amusing and enlightening. I appreciate it. Another email. Ruby, so a few episodes ago, episode 170, I think, you discussed delayed ejaculation syndrome with regards to post-vasectomy. I could not believe what I was hearing. Everything that was discussed was exactly what I had been experiencing for 2 years. To hear someone else talk about it made me happy that I was not alone in all of it. I then started to look into prostate play, as the writer suggested, and while the orgasms were not the same in intensity, at least they began to happen in a more timely manner. Now I pretty much have to use a plug if I want to orgasm, but at least my sex life is relatively back on track. As far as pegging, etc. goes, I have always been a man's man, athlete, weightlifter, sports, drink beer, handyman, etc. When I was younger and dating an older woman, she wanted to experiment with anal play on both herself and me. I enjoyed the experience, but it was a little painful, and I thought it would make me gay. I was young and dumb, please don't judge me. When I got older, my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, used her fingers on me one night, and holy shit snacks. That's an interesting way to put it. Holy shit snacks. I went through the roof with pleasure, but again, I got the sense that since I am a man, that I shouldn't like it because, well, that's for gay guys, not guys like me. I have to say, and this is all in caps, I was stupid. Now that I have the delayed ejaculation syndrome, I have experimented with myself for a few months and was nervous to tell my wife about it. She and I had become frustrated with my inability to orgasm from sex or anything else most of the time, and I didn't want to add to the stress. Finally, I flat out told her about the plug and showed it to her. While she was not overly receptive, she understood that I needed that in order to finish. We used it a few times together during sex, and it was great. Finally, I got over my fear and started trying other things. I bought a dildo offline and used that on myself. Again, holy shit snacks. Even though it was amazing, I was again afraid to talk to my wife, so I continued to listen to your podcast, as now I had become an addict to listening, and finally I built up the courage to tell her about this new toy. I explained it to her and what I do with it, and she couldn't have been less receptive. My hopes were dashed away faster than Saint Nick on Christmas night. I listened to another of your podcasts, and it gave me the courage to flat out show it to her one night, and we talked about what her role was. The other night, we finally got some alone time together, and she was unable to have sex, so I asked for her to help me. I pulled out the toy and asked if she was comfortable with using it on me. She was willing, as long as I showed her how. She doesn't use toys on herself, it doesn't do anything for her, she says. Once I started, she took over, and as you can guess, holy shit snacks. I came in about 45 seconds, new record for myself, I think. I felt close with her in a way I never did before, and I am kicking myself for not discussing it sooner. Damn it, Ruby, why did I waste so much time thinking it was gay to play around in the down below, and why did I wait so long to tell my wife that I wanted to try it? So many wasted, mind-blowing experiences. So I guess I'm saying all this to tell you to keep on encouraging us manly men to have faith in ourselves and in our significant others. Not quite time for you to play the music for me. I'll write again and let you know when you can blare the music for me. Cheers. Blare the music for me. Oh, okay. So it has to be a little extra loud when you get fucked, finally. Oh, my goodness. I love hearing from the manly men. Thank you for enlightening us as to the struggle that takes place in your head, in your heart, when you start to do the anal play. I've heard this a lot. And it's not just inside you, it's what society expects of you as well. I think that's more of it. And sometimes what your spouse expects of you or your partner. So that was much appreciated, your description of your struggle with that. I love the holy shit snacks, I have to say. I've never heard that before. That's totally awesome. And I'm really glad that your wife was receptive enough to try using it on you. One of the things that I do tell men sometimes who have partners who are really not completely, you know, forget it, I'm not touching it, I don't want anything to do with it, but more along the lines of, I'm just not interested in doing that to you. Sometimes I tell those men to put a butt plug in while they're fucking their partners. And many times, what happens is what happened with you. They come with such intensity that their partners notice, whoa, this is different, and become intrigued. So that's one of the ways that men have interested their partners and then eventually walk down that path toward pegging. So hopefully that's what happens for you. I have the music cued, sir. Thanks for writing in. I really appreciate it. At this juncture, I would like to remind everyone about my special podcast schedule. January 9th, 2017 is going to be my podcast for crossdressers. I would love to hear from all you crossdressers out there. You need to send your contributions in by January 6th. And then on February 13th, this is going to be a podcast about bisexuality. Please submit all your contributions for that podcast by February 10th. And I will continue to announce this on the podcast in case you forget. But that January 6th is coming up pretty quick, all you beautiful crossdressers. I would love to hear your stories. I've got a whole bunch of them so far, so this might be a two-parter because there's been some very enthusiastic replies that I can't wait to share with you. And now I have an erotic story I'm going to read for you. As you can imagine, I get all kinds of mail, and a lot of times people send me their stories. And this is actually a story from back in December of 2014 that landed in my inbox, and I never shared, and I never did anything with. This is from a guy who we actually played the music for him in podcast number 52, and he wrote this story to me. I'm lazily waiting for my girlfriend to come home from night school, laying on the couch watching manly shit, when I receive a text from her, my goddess. The floors better be clean, a bath waiting, and you dressed in the outfit I left for you, bitch. I nervously get up and walk to the bedroom and find the outfit laying on the bed. I pick up her pink panties, her full pantyhose, and even a little bra, much too small for her, but will fit my flat chest. I quickly receive a second text saying, shower up and put the outfit on when you're clean. I check my watch and realize that I have very limited time to get all this done before my beautiful goddess arrives home. I get into the shower and clean myself as instructed. I shave what little body hair I have and finish cleaning myself. I pull up the panties, adjust my growing cock as needed. I bunch up the pantyhose and pull them on my now smooth legs. I put the bra on and adjust everything. I feel the excitement growing in my stomach. Nervous, just like waiting for a roller coaster to begin. I quickly clean the floors and just finish running the bath as I hear the front door open. I know my mistress wants me waiting for her, waiting on display. I move to the bedroom and bend over the side of the big king-size bed, present my body, my ass, to her as she deserves. The bedroom door opens, and I turn my head slowly and look over my shoulder at my queen. I can tell she's happy, though she isn't smiling. The floors look clean, and so do you, my little slut. Look at that ass, up in the air, begging to get fucked. That's what you want, isn't it? My girl cock sliding in and out of your ass, the big head sliding against your prostate. Let me hear you say it. Beg for my dick, baby. I hesitated. Smack! Her hand lands hard on my pantyhose-covered ass. I wince and know enough to say, thank you, mistress. And I swallow slowly and make the choice in my mind to fully submit to this beautiful goddess, my goddess. The girl of my dreams, who already has me bent over the bed, wearing her most intimate of things, her most female things. Please fuck me, mistress. Please use your big hard cock on my little ass. Use me however you want to. She said, as if thinking. Maybe later. She stands up and walks to the bathroom. Bring me some wine, my little slut, and come and wash my back. I don't hesitate this time. I rush to complete the task, my ass stinging, the thong wedged up tightly in between my ass cheeks. I bring the wine to her just as she's stepping into the tub, her back to me. I instantly narrow my gaze in on her perfect ass. My mouth waters. I move to the edge of the tub and drop to my knees as usual. I give her the wine and begin to wash her back, more of a massage than a wash, rubbing her neck, her back, her sides, then her breasts. She moans slightly before clearing her throat. You did not ask permission, slut. I move my hands back to the real task, distracted by her beauty. I finish washing her back before she adjusts her seating and raises a foot in front of me. I know what she wants, and I give it to her. I rub her feet, soaping them, deeply rubbing her foot muscles. Would you like to kiss my feet, my little love toy? Yes, ma'am, I barely muster from my mouth, unsure where to look. Well, maybe I'll let you later. Bring me a towel and go back and wait as I found you. I quickly do as I'm told, again, almost running to the bedroom, my cock sticking up as hard as it's ever been from the top of her panties. I bend over the bed again, my cock pressing hard against the mattress, already starting to leak pre-cum. I then hear the door open. My heart skips a beat and skips another beat when I look over my shoulder. She's standing in the doorway wearing black stockings that lace up the back, held up by a black garter belt. A black lace bra frames and holds her perfect breasts together, amplifying her cleavage. Her blonde hair frames her face, her eyes made up in black eyeliner. But she has one more item on, her cock, her real dough, an extension of her body that she's learned to use, mastered it, rather. My stomach flips, the peak of the roller coaster feeling. I hear her heels on the floor as she tells me, turn forward. I look ahead, now feeling exposed. Her hand softly touches my ass, almost a tickle. She's examining me. I can feel her eyes on my body. I'm nervous. I see you've cleaned yourself for me. Good boy. I then feel two hands on my ass. Both hands go to my crack. I then gasp as I feel her rip the pantyhose open. I can't breathe. My ass is perfectly encircled by the pantyhose. She pulls the thin bit of her thong I wear to the side. I hear her squeeze lube from the bottle, followed by the feeling of two cold, slippery fingers at my back entrance. I bite down on the bedspread and concentrate on relaxing my ass muscles, giving in to her, letting my beautiful goddess use me however she would like. I feel her fingers enter me, my ass stretched around her fingers. She stays still for enough time for me to adjust to the intrusion that is wanted. I guess you can't call it an intrusion, then. I widen my stance and open my mouth, dropping the bedspread, and moan aloud, letting her know how it feels, how I feel. I feel like hers, her bitch. She begins to slowly slide her fingers in and out, each stroke feeling better and better. As I begin to push myself back to meet her fingers, she knows I'm ready for more. I'm going to fuck your ass, slut. I'm going to ram my big hard cock into your bitch ass. Look at you shoving your ass against my fingers. How greedy. Tell me you want my cock, bitch. Please, my queen, use me how you want. I'm yours. I need to submit to you. I need your hard cock inside me. I give in, trying to get over my reserved feelings. I want you to own me. I want you to know that by putting your cock into me, you own me physically and mentally. I'm submitting to you in every way. I would follow you anywhere. Do whatever you tell me to. She slides her hand up my back, snapping the bra strap as she goes before her fingers entwining into my hair. Her fingers leave my ass and I feel empty. No other word to describe that feeling. But then I feel the tip of her cock press slightly against my asshole. You asked for it, my beautiful little slut. With that, she shoves her entire dick up my ass. I clench my fingers. I open my mouth and groan loudly. I hear, oh, yes, before I realize it's coming from my mouth. She begins to slide her cock almost all the way out before shoving it all the way back in again. Oh, what a pretty sight that is, my cock disappearing into your tight, hungry, slutty ass. I just moan again and begin thrusting back to meet her strokes. One hand in my hair, the other on my hip, pulling my ass to her as she slams me hard. I'm loving it. I look over my shoulder and take in the sight of her standing over me, her breasts swaying with each thrust. Behind her, I see the image of her in the mirror fucking her little bitch slut. I feel my cock leaking all over the bed, leaking pre-cum, and getting closer to a full-out orgasm. Flip over, my little slut. I want to watch your face as I own your ass. I feel her slide out, the emptiness returning. I quickly get onto the bed and roll to my back. Looking forward, I can see myself in the mirror, and I feel a mix of emotions. Horny, slutty, submissive, shame, humiliation, and another horny. My goddess moves forward, and I look her up and down, finishing staring into her eyes. I look down as she does, lining her cock to my asshole and sliding it in. I roll my head and open my mouth, gasping. She stretches me out and begins to thrust full strokes in and out of my ass again. I lift my legs, pointing my toes to the ceiling as she instructs me to. She grabs both my ankles and lifts them up, crossing my legs as she does. She then really begins to slam in and out of me. I feel the bed begin to slide across the floor as she owns me, as she lets me know who's in charge. I begin to moan and mumble out of control. I beg her for more, and she gives me more. She puts one leg on each shoulder and reaches around my thighs and grabs my cock. "Whose cock is this, slut?" she asks, emphasizing her words on each stroke. I moan aloud and answer, "It's yours, my queen. You own it. The cum inside it and me. Fuck, I'm so yours. I'd give you whatever you like." "Yes," she screams and begins to cum. She strokes my cock as she fucks me. I open my mouth in awe of watching her and the feelings she's giving me. She strokes my cock till I warn her I'm going to come. "Yes, come. Come for me like it's my own cock," and continues storming me. I relax and let the orgasm begin. It's strong, I can tell from the beginning. I feel my ass clamping down on her thick cock and feel my cum begin to move up it. She's coming before the first strand of cum exits my cock, but I feel her orgasm gain strength on the sight. She screams loudly and thrusts harder. I shoot strand after strand in time with her powerful strokes. I cum more than I ever have. After I finish cumming, she's not done. She quickly slides out of me and lays on the bed, her cock sticking up. "Ride it for me, my pet," she says. I quickly move up, straddle her, and lower myself onto her hard cock. "Fucking ride it," she commands, and I do. I begin to buck my hips, as I've seen her do so many times. She reaches out and begins to quickly stroke my cock. I feel my second orgasm ready to erupt. I warn her as I ride her cock hard. "Come again," she says. I replace her hand with mine and begin to stroke as fast and hard as I can. I watch her hand go to my stomach, scooping up some cum, and she moves her hand to my mouth and shoves it in. "Now come while you taste your own cum, my slut." I do. I erupt again, all over her now, the first strand landing between her breasts. I come, but not near the volume as the first time. I then collapse on her, exhausted. She removes her cock slowly from my ass while I lay panting on top of her, still coming down from my orgasm. We roll as one onto our sides before she rolls again, becoming the little spoon. I know exactly what she wants. I begin to stroke her back as she is still coming down and extremely sensitive. I continue to rub her back as we fall asleep, both satisfied. "I love you, my queen," I whisper. "I love you too, my slut," she responds softly as she thrusts her ass back slightly, pushing on my sensitive cock. So there's your story, and he actually has a bit of a PS here. "Just thought you may like this. This is not an untypical night for us now. I wrote you a pegging celebration story last summer, podcast number 52. We have sure progressed in our kinky journey. I'm in a cage most of the time. Some freedom after I've come, usually a few days before she locks me up and the dance begins again. I listen to your podcast in the shower while I'm readying myself for her. You've become part of my foreplay. Anyways, thanks for what you do. Whatever you do with the story is up to you. It's yours." Oh my. So that has been sitting in my mailbox for what, 3 years? Goodness sakes. Thank you. You will get an email, you know, telling you that I use this on the podcast. And of course, if I'm your foreplay, you're going to be listening in the shower while you hear your own story. Of course, it's been long enough. You might kind of have forgotten it by now. I think it's way hot, the dance that you guys do, where you're periodically locked up and not. and clearly you have a dominant-submissive relationship. I read this because this is the kind of thing that some people wince at when they're not into any kind of dominance or submission. But this is also a way that people play who absolutely love it, love giving up those controls, love being called a slut, love calling their partner a slut. So I wanted to show everybody one more way of doing pegging. This is a little bit closer to pegging porn, but not really, because everything I read here is all about love and everything. Sure, she's calling you a slut and all that kind of stuff, but clearly you love it. So it's been 3 years. If you have any more stories, please send them in. And partly I wanted to read this because I have erotic pegging stories that I have recorded. And to hear all of those, all you have to do is become a patron at $5 a month, like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, and you will have all kinds of erotic stories to listen to, much less read, even more to read, way more to read. I'm working hard to try and do an audio recording of all of my stories, and one by one, I'm getting them, I'm putting them up on Patreon for my patrons, so at $5 a month or more. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed that story. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we are done for this time. You can find my work at peggingparadise.com, where I have my blog, my podcast, my erotica, and the forum. Pegging101.com has informational pegging articles only and no kink. My podcasts are available through a variety of podcast downloader apps, which you can find a sampling of under the tab Follow on my website for both Android and iPhones. You can also stream my podcast directly from my website if you want to. The Follow tab has links for you to subscribe to my blog, follow me on Twitter, and check out my Facebook page. Please remember, if you order any toys from enticeme.com, use that coupon code RIDER for 15% off of your purchase. Send your questions, your stories, and anything you want to ruby@peggingparadise.com. No question is too intelligent, too irrational, or too irresponsible. Many listeners are going to learn along with you, so don't be shy. Throw those questions in my mailbox or call me at 805-500-6544. Thank you for downloading and listening, everybody. You rock. Happy pegging.